I thought we would again look at the first reading, because year after year, when we're in this time, we've looked at the gospel. So you know all that now. You know. So we have this letter of Peter. There are two, as you know. They're remarkably different. This one is written in a very nice Greek. Peter, who was a native Aramaic speaker, probably had a secretary who put it into better Greek. The second letter is not in good Greek. It's one of the books in the New Testament that has a lot of mistakes in it, grammatically, which is interesting. The other is the book of Revelation, which of course causes everybody some problems. John, the gospel, the letters are limpid. The most correct Greek in the New Testament, well, except for the letter to the Hebrews. But we'll worry about 2 Peter when we get there. Yesterday, there's a precious line in 2 Peter with a, you know, probably Peter wrote it without the help of the person who helped him with the first one. There's a line in there about being partakers of the divine nature. That is, I mean, to think of that line, that's worth the whole letter. Yesterday, we had this, here it is. There's a line in here that's precious like that too, huh? Although you have not seen him, you love him. What a miracle. You haven't seen him, yet you know him so well that you love him. How is that possible? And there we see, in a way, almost the quintessential work of the Holy Spirit. Right there. Today, there's this vision concerning the salvation of your souls. The prophets who prophesied about the grace that was to be yours searched and investigated it, investigating the time and circumstances that the Spirit of Christ within them indicated. When it testified in advance to the sufferings destined for Christ and the glories that to follow them. There's the foundation for the whole way the New Testament and Christians read the Old Testament. It's all about Christ. Because Christ is the final fruit of all that gift and work of God in the Jewish people for almost over a millennium. It was revealed to them that they were not serving themselves, but you, with regard to the things that have now been announced to you. They were somehow conscious. This is remarkable. And of course, a lot of what they wrote, and their disciples gathered it together. You talk about the prophetic, really like Isaiah, Jeremiah. But then you see for them, all what we call the historical work, not Maccabees and Chronicles, but Samuel and Kings, in the Jewish mind, that's prophets. Those are prophets. You know, when they divide the Bible into the law, the prophets and the writings, the prophets start with Joshua. That's all prophecy. It's all a reflection of how God acts and will act. Okay. They were serving not themselves but you with regard to the things that have been now announced to you. by those who preach the good news to you through the Holy Spirit sent from heaven. And then the things into which angels longed to look. The mercy, the marvel, the wisdom of the Father. Remember how it says something like that? It's in the chapter 3 of the letter to the Ephesians. How it was revealed, the wisdom of God is revealed to the angels as they look into the church and see the wisdom of God working out. And so the angels long to look in that because it gives them such joy. They're ravished with joy to see the way the Father is working out this plan. So you see, we have in that so far, we have the Old Testament and the New Testament. These three stages of God's plan, right? And then you find other, like the letter to the Hebrews and places where that clearly worked out. So they were doing this, testifying, the Spirit within them was testifying in advance to the sufferings destined for Christ and the glories to follow them. So what they were writing by the witness of the Holy Spirit. They saw in what was happening and what was recounted to them this work of God. And they wrote that way. Clearly the prophecies, but the rest too. You know, if you look, for instance, like 1 Kings 8, we have Solomon's prayer. And that prayer, you see, is a prayer to God and thanksgiving is the dedication of the temple. And yet there's the question. You know, we want you to be close to us, but you're God, you're everywhere. How can you be like here and everywhere? But the everywhere is hard for us to relate to. We need you here. And so the dilemma is left. And the solution is the incarnation. And there's another place as well in the book of Kings where this is pointed out, the whole reality of a king. See, there's prophecies there. There's, okay. Now comes the third stage. Gird up the loins of your mind and live soberly. That was, see, that's the whole, look at your life, look at your emotions, look at the mess, and get it into some order so that you can think about these things and be ready. And set your hopes, now we come to the third part, completely on the grace to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. I thought he revealed himself. He did, but he's coming back. There will be a moment when the glory and the majesty and the lordship and the power of Jesus Christ will be revealed, and there will be no more history. And he's saying, set your hopes on that moment. Like obedient children, do not act in compliance with the desires of your former ignorance, but as he who called you was holy, be holy yourselves. And he returns to this exhortation. If that's where we're going, if that's our life, if that's what's really going on in us already, then we should be holy and not live in compliance with the desires of our former ignorance when we didn't know this. So that's 1 Peter, the beginning anyway.